Greetings to each of you on this day. Today is chapter 16 of My Soul Waits by Marva Dawn. And Marva, in this chapter, shares her vulnerability when all hope seems lost. So the title of this chapter, The Lord is Near When We've Lost All Hope, from Psalm 34, verses 11 and 17 through 19. And the words are this: Come, my children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. The righteous cry out, and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. The righteous may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers them from them all. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves those who have lost all hope. Well, there's times in our lives where we feel like perhaps that we've lost all hope. And it's in those moments and in those times where we cling to something beyond us, something bigger than us. Marva wrote about how she lost all hope. She was going through a divorce, a failed marriage. And she was talking about her difficulty around her health concerns and health issues that continued to come up, and how it was affecting her work and her relationships and just the time in which she was living. And she says, all I knew at that time in life, those things as they were piling up, was the despair of rejection, desertion, poor health, and betrayal. And the list could have gone on. And so why? Why go on? Why continue to move forward? And then she was vulnerable and authentic when she said she simply couldn't feel God's presence in the midst of that. And it was in those depths of despair that she began to look closely for signs of hope. So the question that I would ask on this day, as we live in challenging times, and not just corporately throughout the world, but also individually, we all have our stories. The laundry list is long. Where is there hope in the midst of anguish? Where is there hope in the midst of anguish? Well, the New English Bible translates the first phrase of verse 18 here as, the Lord is close to those whose courage is broken. The verse could refer to brokenness of the will, but it almost or might also designate a fracturing, pointing to a falling apart of one's character, in the sense that God searches and refines our heart when our heart is broken or our heart is lost or when we've lost our way, that God searches and refines us in the heart. And in that case, the phrase could then emphasize that Yahweh is near to those who are crushed by their own sinfulness and guilt, by the things that we've done wrong, the things that we have done that have injured others, where we've missed the mark. Our own sinfulness and guilt. Because if we're honest, there are times that we may be appalled by our failures, our misgivings, our missing the mark. Well, the nearness of the Lord to the brokenhearted implies a sense of tenderness for Yahweh. That no matter how dirty our face, how dark our shame, how troubled our spirit, because we have spoiled our relationship with the shepherd or mistrusted God's goodness because of the immensity of our sorrow, yet God still chooses to be beside us in our grief. I want you to imagine that on this day, that God is not ahead of you. God is not behind you. Certainly can be in all of that, but God is literally beside you in your grief. You see, much of the sorrow of our broken hearts takes the form of those disabling questions, the whys, or what more could I have done? Our brokenheartedness is often multiplied by the intense guilt we feel. In the Lord's nearness, we can learn more truly what is sin, for which we are freely forgiven? And what is false guilt, which Yahweh will help us to put away? The Apostle Paul began so many of his letters and ended so many of his letters with a reminder of the gift of forgiveness and the release that comes when he wishes his readers grace and peace to you. Grace and peace be with you. Well, in the poetic parallel line to this, the Lord is close to the brokenhearted. David declares here that Yahweh saves or delivers those who are crushed in spirit. The verb is from the root yasha, from which we get Yeshua, the Hebrew word for our English name, Jesus. This meaning of the name is noted when the angel Gabriel commands Joseph, "You are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." You see the connection? That's from Matthew 1, verse 21. The Trinity, God, Jesus, and the Spirit, has accomplished our deliverance through Yeshua, the saving one. So Yahweh is near, and Yahweh rescues. This is the hope to which Marva clung to in the many months when she felt despair and that sense of being alone and lost. That's what she clung to. And when she felt so crushed and she didn't feel capable of holding on any longer, she wrote that a pastor would reassure her, "Don't forget, Marva, God will never let you go." In the midst of the darkness of despair, we need to keep hearing the word of comfort that Yahweh is near until we can believe it and see its true light. You see, the poet David is realistic. He continues by acknowledging that the righteous may have many troubles, and oh Lord, is that ever true? We look out at those who are good, those seeking to do so much good, those just filled with faith and light and love. Their troubles are just as many as anyone else. Life doesn't seem to dole out hardship to one person versus the other. It's an equal opportunity of hardship. And it doesn't matter sometimes how faithful you have been in life. The list of troubles can be long. Yes, many are the miseries or distresses of the righteous, the ones who desire to be just and good, who choose God's way. And that sets us up, it seems sometimes, for extra trials. Not because we deserve them, but because the powers of evil sometimes are actively engaged in the struggle against the good that we seek to do. I think that's why in the Lord's Prayer, it includes the prayer, "Thy kingdom come and deliver us from evil." For the opposite side of the same coin of doing God's will and participating in God's kingdom purposes are the temptations to live that way for our own benefit, and the possibility that we will idolatrously serve the purposes of evil instead of God. That yes, we can make that mistake, living for self, focused only on me. Well, the Bible tells us that we can rejoice when we encounter struggles in our spiritual lives. That's from James chapter 1, verses 2 through 8. They build our character, and they form us with godly virtues. However, the Bible also tells us that if we are leading godly lives, we will be persecuted. That's from 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 10 through 12. And that might make us wonder, if I'm not being persecuted, am I really living the alternative life of the Christian community? Have I become so enculturated in that my neighbors don't see in me the difference that Christ makes? Furthermore, we have to realize that each of us is actively engaged in the cosmic battle between good and evil. If our desire is to fulfill the purpose of God, then we are going to encounter obstructions. Take it to the bank, cash the check, just say, "Yes, Lord, it is gonna happen." Well, as Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12 reminds us, our battle is not against mere flesh and blood, but it's against the powers of a dark world. And we ought not to over-spiritualize these powers. Though Ephesians 6 does also mention the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms, the chapter primarily discusses the principalities and powers that operate in this world through such modern manifestations as maybe technology, politics, the rat race of a busy world, the god of money. Many of the obstructions in our faith lives come from the ordinary things that surround us, but get out of hand or overstep their roles and become gods dominating in our lives. Today, take some time to again list those gods that dominate your life in this world. Well, according to C.S. Lewis, there are two mistakes that we can make about Satan and all these powers of evil in whatever material or spiritual form they take. One error is to not take them seriously enough. We must pay attention to the realism of such phrases as many are the afflictions of the righteous. The other mistake is to take them too seriously and to fail to remember that in his death, Christ defeated the principalities and powers by exposing them and disarming them. This from Colossians chapter 2, verse 13 through 15. The Easter empty tomb is the seal of that victory. God reigns. God delivers. God raises us up through the principalities and powers, the dark powers of this world. So even though there are many troubles for the righteous, the Lord delivers us from them all. At times, we practice patience. We must be patient with the long process of healing, yet confident that ultimately the Lord will deliver us from our straits and our distresses. Ultimately, God will reign victorious. And as we wait, there's an invitation in this psalm that comforts us softly. Come, my children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. David certainly had plenty of experience in knowing the Lord's deliverance from his troubles. And consequently, he can tenderly address his listeners as children and to invite us to learn from him, from his gift of wisdom, insight that was gained through many trials, tests, and tribulations. I think we gain great hope, yes, by listening to those who've suffered the same griefs that we bear. We can glean from them how they survived their sorrows, how they've grown from them, and how Yahweh was near in the midst of them. That's the great value, after all, of support groups and prayer partners, of biographies and testimonies of faith. It's a gift that we see throughout the tapestry of Scripture. As Marva looked back upon the times of her deepest heartbreak and sorrow, she began to realize that she was more helped by those who said, things are going to be tough for a while, but God is with you, than by those who patted her on the back with a glib, everything will turn out fine. I want to say that again, that she was often blessed in her deepest heartbreak and sorrow, when somebody would come into her life, a friend, a colleague, somebody in the faith, and they would look her in the eye and they tell her the truth, that things are going to be tough for a while, but God is with you. And that was more of a gift than those who patted her on the back with the words, everything will turn out fine. She writes, the first words might sound cruel, yet she can remember rejoicing at that kind of truth. It's the kind of truth that would set her free. And the Lord desires that you too would be set free. And so on this day, a few questions of reflection to meditate upon. Why is it comforting to know that the Lord is near when you are brokenhearted? 2, how might my insights into these verses enable me to minister to a friend who is brokenhearted? 3, what does it mean that the Lord saves? 4, how can you cope when Yahweh does not seem to be delivering you out of your troubles? How do you cope? And the last question for today, who are your heroes of faith? Those to whom you listen for words of wisdom and instruction. Who is coming alongside you, just as God does, sharing words of wisdom and truth, of great love and blessing? As you discern your thoughts, your concerns, and the mysteries of God in your life, may you discover great blessing, for God truly is with us. We'll see you next time.